practice of excessive force against people suffering from or perceived to have a mental illness. The City of Portland and the Department of Justice negotiated a settlement agreement, which was adopted by the Portland City Council. The Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform has been at the forefront of this entire process. In fact, the AMA Coalition initiated this DOJ investigation of the Portland Police Bureau. So we'll discuss this agreement for police reform. And next month, on February 18th, the public will have an opportunity to weigh in on these proposed changes to the Portland Police Bureau. So, Kelvin, before we get into this settlement agreement, provide some background. The AMA Coalition's investigation of the Portland Police. Now, talk about how this came about and why.
Well, first, I would like to thank you for hosting this show and inviting us to participate in this very important dialogue. I would like to start off by first giving a brief history of the Albina Ministry Alliance. The Albina Ministry Alliance was formed by a group of pastors that wanted to impact public policy as well as social justice issues. They saw a void in an independent lens being able to address issues when citizens felt that the bureaucracy did not give them a voice. So they looked at the structure of the city of Portland, which is comprised of 95 neighborhoods, and they decided to incorporate an effort and a nonprofit to be able to serve as public advocates on an array of social justice issues. And police accountability is just one.
And Kelvin, throughout the years prior to the Department of Justice investigation, the AMA Coalition submitted recommendations to the City of Portland for police reform. Is that correct?
It is correct that the Albina Ministry of Lines have been a constant pressure to seek reforms within the City of Portland. That is correct.
So why did the AMA then request the U.S. Department of Justice come to Portland to investigate the Portland Police?
Well, in context to the lens of AMA, there were there appearances that appeared to be unfair and unjust towards a targeted market of folks. And as such, the actions on behalf of the city was not acceptable. So therefore, the Albina Ministry Alliance created a broad coalition that requested the United States Justice Department to come in and conduct an independent investigation with the expectation of delivering findings of facts.
And who were these targeted people that you mentioned?
Well, there were a number of different groups, but specifically to this United States of Justice inquiry, it was mental health families and those folks who suffered from mental health issues.
So the initial request from the AMA Coalition to the Department of Justice was not to come and investigate how the Portland Police treat people of color in the community.
The inquiry within the Justice Department was to take a look at practices that appeared to be discriminatory in implementation, and people of color certainly were part of that complaint. However, it's important to take a broader understanding of how the criminal justice system works. The Supreme Court has given a great deal of freedom for police matters and police misconducts. So if you just request an inquiry on racial profiling, well, that's not going to go very far with the Justice Department. So it had to be specific. And in this case, it was mental health, the patterns and practices of treatment towards people with mental health. And that is why the Department of Justice came in to do an in-depth inquiry into these various cases and also looked at other things as well.
So the Department of Justice came to Portland. And then how did they proceed?
The Department of Justice came to the City of Portland with two strategies. Number one, they wanted to go out to the city's 95 neighborhoods and hear what the citizens had to say about the department. Secondly, after hearing what the city's 95 neighborhoods citizens had to say, then they conducted their independent inquiry into the police department. And after conducting, indicated that there were a declaration of changes that they were going to mandate and put requests that a federal judge make sure happens. In context to the settlement agreement, the judge forced everyone to come around the table and then to set in course a plan of reforms that everyone would agree with. And once that agreement was finalized by the folks around the table, then the city issued an adoption of those reforms. And so that is what comprises the settlement agreement. What makes this significant is that what it says is that Oregon Municipal Law gives the city council the authority to convene inquiries and to essentially summons finding of facts. Our leadership, a Democratic body, put their head in the sand and said, we're going to wait to see what happens. Well, nothing happened. And so it's forced civil disobedience by citizens such as Albina Ministry Alliance to step up and say, if you're not going to do anything, then we're going to exercise our opportunity to bring in the United States Justice to create a process that you should be doing yourself. And so what it says to any public advocate, to any mother or father, that in the event that you feel that your rights have been abridged, there is a standard and a statute and a cited case where that you can take your grievance to the federal courts. And there is a process that you can have to have redress. To most folks who understand history, you say, well, this is just a natural process. Well, if you are a family in crisis with very little money and you're going up against a bureaucracy, it can be quite frightening. And so to know that I have the opportunity to contact AMA, I have the opportunity to seek redress through a federal lawsuit, that gives you great reassurance and it creates accountability for those few bad apples that may feel that they are above the law. And so in addition to this, what has happened that hasn't happened in any other city in the nation that's had these type of investigation is that the judge has made Albina Ministry Alliance a friend of the court. That means that it's a title called enhanced amicus. So what that means is that the body can actually make recommendations directly to the judge for considerations on what current reforms should be. And it sets a standard for future opportunities for things to get done.
With that, let's get to the fact sheet and the items that the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform have put forth as proposed changes in this settlement agreement. And all of this information is available on the albinaministerialcoalition.org website. There's a number of organizations and churches and individuals in the AMA coalition. Is everyone in agreement with this fact sheet and what the AMA coalition has provided?
Yes, they are. The NAACP, which is a part of the AMA coalition, we have been asked to hold educational forums around the community on this settlement agreement. And that is our role, to go into the various districts and also let them know what is going on and their opportunity on February the 18th to come and voice their opinion on this particular agreement. Can I elaborate on the changes proposed in this agreement?
Let's hear it.
Okay. Changes are being made to the Bureau use of force policy, including that police must de-escalate their use of violence as resistance from the subject decreases. Another is officers who are found in civil court to have violated someone's rights must be subject to an internal affairs investigation, presuming they are guilty of misconduct unless the evidence shows they are not. Supervisors will be trained to conduct annual performance reviews on officers. And lastly, officers will be banned from using offensive epithets, including mentals, a prohibition that extends to internal communication.
So these are the good points AMA agrees with in the settlement agreement. So that's 4 of 20 that are good. So there's 16 that the AMA coalition says does not go far enough, inhibits accountability, or is inappropriately silent.
So change contract, which are inhibiting effective investigations, such as the so-called 48-hour rule.
Talk about the 48-hour rule. Explain what that is.
This is allowing 48 hours after deadly force incidents before officers are interviewed, and provisions limiting independent civilian investigation of misconduct, including shooting. Another where the agreement doesn't go far enough is that the new position of compliance officer, community liaison, is created to oversee implementation of the agreement, but has no power before the federal court when recommending changes. Another is while some new restrictions are made about taser use, the agreement retains and expands loopholes for excessive taser use. The agreement is not explicit enough in calling for officers to use the least force necessary, doesn't allow for a matrix tying maximum force levels to certain levels of resistance, and it doesn't prohibit the use of weapons, animals, or vehicles as intimidation when no threat exists, and doesn't prohibit the use of force on down or injured subjects. And one more is that the agreement mentions the Training Advisory Council, which advises the police on training policy, should also require community member involvement in all aspects of training, including developing, facilitating, and participating in the training.
And then this fact sheet goes on to talk about where the agreement actually inhibits police accountability, and one of them is the Fred Bryant Clause. So, Dr. Trill, talk about that. What exactly is that?
Now, one sentence prohibits appeals to the Citizen Review Committee, the CRC, by people who survive police shootings or the survivors of a death in custody victim. The city should implement a Fred Bryant Clause in city code allowing such an appeal to happen.
And if I can echo what Dr. Terrell has said, Keith Notice was shot by the police. His father's name was Fred Bryant, who recently passed. From the mouth of the father, I went and filed a complaint, and the information that I got was so confusing that it didn't make any sense. And so now I have no other redress to be able to get any other information because there's no subpoena power from those citizens to be able then to bring in those officers that were involved. And so what the citizens are asking for is that a Fred Bryant Clause be passed by the city council that would give an appeal law to the independent police review structure. That simply says in its simplest form that if you do not agree with the findings of facts, the information that was provided, then that you can seek an appeal to dig deeper into the issue. And the city council has the authority to pass this rule and this regulation.
I'm sensitive to the where the agreement is inappropriately silent about having the money to do the things necessary. Let me just say to you what the agreement said. The agreement does not direct the city how to expend resources toward lowering the amount of force needed and improving accountability. As a result, the city has budgeted roughly $5 million per year over 5 years, totaling over $25 million, but never engaged in a public dialogue about where that money would best be spent. And my concern is, who is making that decision about that money? And for me, especially the NAACP, who will be making decisions on that? And we want to be able to have a recommendation for that person. These organizations should have a recommendation, and that decision is just not made by one person. It should be the community that comes together to make a recommendation who that individual should be. There are people that are directly affected by this, we as parents and grandparents. So that is one particular one that I am concerned with.
And again, that is one of the areas where the agreement is inappropriately silent.
You know, I think we can take a pull from James Madison's quote when he said that our society is made of factions and that folks are going to disagree and that it's up to our elected body and our elected officials to serve as a mediator. If we had a city council with leadership that said on the left side, do not blame AMA and the citizen advocates who are demanding that our fundamental principles of democracy represent our standard, if we had the city leadership that would say, don't blame the officers who are trying to keep our city from having chaos and tyranny, you blame me as an elected official. Until we have a perfect system, I will be the impartial and impassionate body that issues a determination of findings. We don't have that. And I think it's a structural issue, and I think it's a leadership issue. The structural issue is that the city of Portland is made up of 95 neighborhoods. So therefore, if you want to run for city council, you have to run in all the city's 95 neighborhoods. Well, mental health folks getting shot unjustly in North and Northeast Portland may not be an issue to the people that live in Reed College, whose issue is cats in their trees. So therefore, we need in this city single-member districts. So there are four city commissioners. North, Northeast, Portland would be district. Downtown would be District 2, Southeast, and Northwest. That way, each commissioner would have their own district with the mayor running at large. If you take a look at the number of women and people of color who've been elected in office around this United States, we'll see that women and people of color have been elected by far by single-member districts. Now, why is that important? Well, it's important because if someone lives in a district that these issues are happening, they're going to take a stand. They're going to say, no, I demand that we as a city council not defer responsibility, that we commission an inquiry. I want to hear from the mother. I want to hear from that officer. We're going to mandate that we get the findings here, and then we either come up with some type of mediation and resolution, or don't waste that family's time who's going through a difficult time. Let them go to court and seek redress through a civil tort. So I think that we have to also include that this monumental consent decree by the United States Justice Department and by these fantastic community leaders and partners, this effort then opens other broader discussions about equal representation in terms of single member districts as being part of the solution.
Kelvin, Dr. Terrell, I do have a loved one that does have a mental health challenge, who is involved in and out of the criminal justice system and the jails and prison. And it is a constant concern of mine. He rides the max. He's on TriMet. When he goes out into the community, that his behaviors are going to call attention to himself, and the police will be called. And the next thing you know, these incidents escalate so fast, and they can go very wrong very quickly. And I want to see all police trained in crisis intervention. I want to see a 24-hour, 7 days a week treatment center where there are medical staff would go and be cared for. How far does the agreement go with this type of reform?
Well, let me just say, if we can spend $60 million for a tram, we certainly should be able to find money to create such a program. That touches my heart in particular because I've served as a crisis manager for Vancouver, and I was responsible for receiving calls in the middle of the night for families who had kids and adults who had mental health problems. And it was interesting because the new model that was created during that time frame was they didn't call the police. They referred to as crisis managers. And it was our job to meet in twos to go and de-escalate the situation. And then they get that person either in a situation where they're stable or determine if police needed to be called. And I can tell you right now, I there was a number of times when as a crisis manager, contracted manager, I could easily have seen if you're not trained in how to deal with mental health issues. And let me just say something. We all have family members or friends or know someone that's suffered depression or have a mental health issue. So it's not a us against them. It is a community issue, and we need to put structures in place to make sure that there are responders that can support the family that need the support. But let me just also echo your strategy that the city of Portland needs to develop a strategy in terms of how to address this issue. If we had single member districts, then we could have a triage system within each district that when a call is made, then it's that triage responsibility to go out to be the first responders or certainly a co-responders. But the absence of the strategic thinking around this, the absence of those folks who do not look through the lens of those who have gone who are experiencing these type of issues, then they don't look at that kind of apparatus and that structure. So I would agree that is the next conversation that needs to happen, which is how do we empower programs in the churches, in nonprofits, but not for free. If we can pay for a $1 billion pipe project, then we need to be able to shift some of those dollars to creating a strategic district strategy triage system that responds when a mother or father is in crisis or when there's an episode.
Let me just add that thank you for sharing your personal story, because I see that this case has gone far beyond just the agreement as today, because if you're concerned about your son being out with that has possibly mental issues. Well, I'm a grandmother Mike's grandson has autism, but he's a beautiful young, and he's only 9, but I know he's starting to want more of his independence. And I too am concerned about him wanting to ride the bus to school and so if he did do something out of normal behavior, as some would say, how would the police treat him? So I relate to you. I feel you on what you're saying. So what laws should be structured, how the police should be trained, how to conduct themselves. So this particular case is a setup for what we are looking for, not only in the present, but in the future, on how that our young children will be treated as they go about living, and even because they may possibly have a mental condition, and how the police would treat them.
And let's talk about that hearing on February 18th. It will be held at the U.S. District Court. Talk about this hearing, Kelvin.
This is exciting. Citizens, whether you have a PhD or no degree, will have the opportunity to go before the judge and say, I think this should be included within the settlement agreement, or I don't think that any of these folks have gone far enough. This is true action. You could come down and speak directly to the judge. And what's special about this is that the judge is very clear. This agreement is clear that if you don't do what I tell you to do, I have the authority as a federal judge to take control of the department and manage it myself. So citizens can present their positions and what they think are relative. I'll give you one quick example. We received an anonymous letter, and this letter asked, because this person had concerns about being targeted and profiled if they went public with conversations. That's the kind of fear we have when we don't have leaders saying, no one's going to challenge you if you speak truth to power. And this person said, please put in writing and give to the judge that there should be no violation of Article 50 and 51 of the Civil Rights Act for those who participated on this monumental effort. And in the body of the letter, she said, because I fear that there will be retaliation for you guys who participated in making this happen. So, but it's okay that person was afraid. It's okay. That person contributed it, and that letter is going to be forwarded to the judge. And that's a great recommendation. That is a great recommendation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what happens on February 18th if the court does find the settlement agreement fair, reasonable, and adequate? What happens then?
Okay, well, what will happen is that on February 18th, what's going to happen is the judge is going to listen to all video recording, audio recording, and public testimonies, and that's going to run for the full day. After he finishes review, then he's going to say, we have an agreement. I'm going to add some things based on what I've heard from public testimony, or I'm going to let stay what we have. And then everyone's going to sign the agreement. And then what will happen following that will be there are some monetary mandates to oversee compliance in different departments. That will be part of a 5-year implementation plan. And then there will be a position that will be created so that this person can monitor the 5-year progress and report back to the community. And I want to emphasize that, because that position is going to be hired. And it's not going to be hired by and recommended by the coalition that started this settlement. So the message to all citizens, whether you have a PhD or no degree, if you want to apply for the position, apply for the position, because this is a great opportunity to hire someone from the community. And so following that hiring process, then it will be the implementation of the reforms over the next 5 years. And then if there's anything breached in that plan, then you go back, not to the mayor, not to the city council, but to the federal judge. And then the federal judge says, it's going to be my way or the highway. And if it's the highway, I'm taking complete control of the department, and you can call me Judge Chief. And that's the bottom line.
And so we are urging everyone, again, to go to the albinaministerialcoalition.org website. find this fact sheet put out by the AMA Coalition and see what they say about this settlement agreement. Educate yourself and attend the fairness hearing scheduled for February 8th. It is at the U.S. District Court, Courtroom 13B at 1000 Southwest 3rd Avenue in Portland. So, Kelvin, Dr. Terrell, everyone feels that this settlement agreement does not go far enough, I believe, but it is a start. It is a beginning. And I think we can agree that this Department of Justice settlement agreement has the potential to decrease police violence and increase police accountability here in the city of Portland. So, any final thoughts?
First foremost, we want to thank you for this opportunity to be here. We have enjoyed the dialogue. Again, I encourage everyone who's listening to be a part of the educational forums that will be around the city in the next few weeks. And we also encourage you to ask questions, bring questions, and also be in attendance on February the 18th. This is historical from my understanding. And of course, we are the community. We've got a voice in this community, and we can implement change. So I encourage your presence at the hearing on February 18th and also at the educational forums that the NAACP will be having.
And Kelvin?
Well, first, I want to thank you for the opportunity to participate mm-hmm. with the president of the NAACP and with a professional, fantastic reporter that is using your forum to make a difference. I liken this example, as I conclude, to say that our founding fathers fought to create a more perfect union because British was unfairly taxing us. But while our fathers created a more perfect union, they all owned slaves. Translation, every system needs oversight. We cannot see systems self-regulating. Otherwise, human interest and self-interest will succeed in directing the outcome. We must stay vigilant. If your job is to write, then write. If your job is to attend a meeting, attend a meeting. If your job is simply to tell someone at your church to be involved, then do that. No activity is small, but we all are large when we all do our part. Thank you.
And thank you, Dr. Audrey Terrell, President, Portland NAACP, and Kelvin Hall, Public Advocate on behalf of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. Thank you so much for being here. You have been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineer, Danielle. Good night.
Mo is Shy, the KBOO docudrama based on the Portland Christmas tree trial, airs this January 29th, 6 to 8 p.m. Here's FBI undercover agent Hussein by Ross Freeman Levin.
We started with small talk. It was important to get him to like me so we could get all the facts. Then the defendant came up with the target of Pioneer Square. Truck full of explosives and blow people up at the tree lighting ceremony on November 26th.
January 29th, 6 to 8 p.m.
We asked KBOO volunteers what they think of commercials.
I hate commercials. That's why I have a DVR at home. I love to just skip right through those bad boys. It's annoying. I mean, it's messages being crammed down your throats for crap you don't need to buy by companies I have no interest in.
So if you like not hearing this...
Hi, friend, Ralph Bosworth here to tell you that everybody must die, but you don't have to be there when it happens. That's why we're having a great going on a body sale. Yes, you can live forever while your friends fall apart around you like rotten fruit, and here's how.
You can support our non-commercial programming by becoming a member of KBOO Community Radio during our pledge drive February 6th through February 15th. We can't wait to thank you on the air.
And it is 7:01 p.m. Martin Luther King Day, Monday, January 20th, 2014. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and up next is Hard Knock Radio, so stay tuned.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, oh.
In history.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another edition. It is Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. On today's show, we celebrate the King holiday by playing some of his speeches. We also talk to the one and only Dr. Joy DeGruy. And we also talk to E. DeRef from the Black Liberation Riders Party. All that and more coming up after the afternoon headlines.
Vocabulary to utter them. You don't need to have a philosophical bent to grasp them. They are three little words.